It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, Collision Specialists, 631-261-6420. That's 631-261-6420. Auto Excellence. Jimmy, I gotta take a dump.
What?
No, I mean I need a dumpster.
Well, for all those needs, you need to call Big V Dumpster Rental, Long Island, New York, 631-900-DUMP.
Elm Logistics, for all your logistic needs, call 631-299-3595. That's 631-299-3595. Elm Global Logistics, pride, performance, and partnerships.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by...
Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude, good fucking wine.
Yeah.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
And Nitro's Garage for all your automotive needs. Call 646-675-2349. That's 646-675-2349. For all your automotive needs, Nitro's Garage. Ask for Jack.
Do you treat your dog as part of the family? Well, so do we. So why not celebrate your pup's birthday with the ultimate party box? Check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Party Pup Info, and let us make your pup's party or any celebration perfection.
M&J Video Games and Collectibles, sport and non-sport cards, wrestling items, autographed items. We buy, sell, and trade. M&J Video Games and Collectibles, located at 1049 Queen Street, Southington, Connecticut. Call us at 1-860-479-9223 or 860-93-GAMES. M&J, Video Games and Collectibles.
Hey, hey, happy Friday, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Wrestling Remembered. I'm your host, Joe What a Day Lowry. And boy, we got a cast of characters joining us this week. And as usual, my panel of experts, there's a mysterious man in the house, too, by the way, that I can see. Leading off with me tonight, he is my brother from another mother. He is the Monty and the Pharaoh Show poet laureate. And of course, I'm talking about the player, Benny Scala. Benny, welcome, brother.
Thanks, Joe. I need to real quick take a quick moment and show everyone this very nice non-bowling shirt, which is out of character for me. But wow. This was a gift from a very dear friend, okay. Former WWF Women's Tag Team Champion, Desiree Peterson. All Desiree right. And Velvet McIntyre. And Desiree, in the words of your fellow Calgarian, I guess that's maybe from Calgary, the late, great Stu Hart.
Desiree, thank you very much.
I would get impressions too. Awesome. So a non-bowling shirt tonight. That's pretty unique. Yes. Are you getting paid for this one or what?
No. Okay. Just gotta wear a gift from a friend.
All right. Awesome. Next up, we have the president of Thursday nights, the man who never minces words, only beef, Mr. Phil DeCesare. Phil, welcome. The mystery man. You got glasses on too. I love it.
Tonight I should be referred to as El Presidente, okay? The president lost a Loser Leave Town match. Actually, he was just ashamed of losing in the finals of the 30, so I am a 245-pound cruiserweight contender. El Presidente.
Nice. Welcome, welcome, El Presidente. And finally, you may know him as the crooked referee and moderator of pro wrestling's hottest game show on Thursday nights, the 30. Let's welcome ESO Bruce. What's up, ESO?
Well, we already know who's starting off in the negative next week.
Man, corruption at its
so,
finest.
Listen, while we're here, I got to give a shout-out to Phil DeCesare right there with an awesome Sleepy Guy T-shirt on that's available at the Monty and the Pharaoh shops nice. On the Monty nice. And the Pharaoh nice website.
Nice. Okay, good plug. Shameless plug. We're going to love it. Going to plug Monty and the Pharaoh YouTube channel. Absolutely. Great programming on its ways. Good stuff coming down the pike. A lot of exciting.
Whoever that's printed that shirt did an amazing job, Phil.
You know it.
And, it's a sweet shirt, man. Good quality.
Yeah, I got to get myself one of those. I wonder if they make my size. I need like a 5XL, I think, or something. They always shrink. You know how they always shrink, you know?
You want to talk about big shirts? I have a new client that I'm doing some stuff for. He shipped some stuff for me that I'm printing out for him this week. They are 7XLT.
7XL? Wow. Nice. I love it. Gotta love it. I want to thank everybody who's joining us live and on the replay, especially everybody in the interactive chat. I see all the regular, I don't mean to steal this one, players out there. Maria, Beth, everybody joining us. Looks like Monty chimed in a little bit saying, Benny, you got a new mic? You got a new microphone, Benny?
No, actually, it's the same mic.
New mic. I love it. Love the new mic, Benny. Awesome. I don't know.
Yeah. Whatever.
Okay. You sound good, right? We all sound great. Yeah. Nice. Hopefully. Okay. Excellent. All right. So this week, folks, we're talking gimmick matches. You know, gimmick matches seem to be the thing going back to the 60s. Well, since the beginning of pro wrestling. Again, we mentioned this last week during our infamous steel cage match segment that basically, you know, gimmick matches are just another way to extend a feud, end a feud, and of course, you know, put butts in seats and so forth, and, you know, give a different element to the sport. Real quickly, we'll go around the room. We'll start with El Presidente, who's now demasked. what's your first recollection of a gimmick match? What do you remember as a gimmick match?
Wow. Well, aside from the more brutal matches, one of my favorites would be the loser leave town match, yes, which has evolved over the years. And, sure. You know, it's put, as you say, Joe, it's put a new spin on feuds, whether it's intensified a feud, right, whether it's ended a feud, whether it's added another element to the feud. And more often than not in these types of matches, the loser does leave town, but usually someone else comes in his stead, in his wake. And it's usually a man of mystery. And we'll take a look at some of those.
There you go.
Probably the first one that we all recall. I think it's the first one I recall.
Sure.
But classically done, you know. Florida, Dateline, 1982. Kevin Sullivan, Dusty Rhodes in the cage.
Yeah.
Dusty was faring very well. It was a bloody battle, likely on his way to victory.
Sure.
And then Santa Claus appeared at ringside. Santa was harboring gifts, and he proceeded to hand a gift through the cage to Kevin Sullivan,
uh-oh,
who in turn used this gift against Dusty.
Sure.
Leveled Dusty, covered Dusty, won the match. Dusty had to leave town for 3 months, as the writer in the contract said.
Yep.
And Santa Claus de-bearded, de-hatted, and proved to be Jake the Snake Roberts, being very, very snake-like and yeah, starting the launch of the Midnight Rider, whom we saw in some very colorful vignettes. To the back when you could play music, particularly the Allman Brothers Midnight Rider, which is such a great song for Dusty. And we saw those vignettes with the campfire and just classic. The first of its kind. And in that picture you have, Bob Geigel has taken the NWA title back. Bob Geigel was the special rep, saying that that the Rider has to unmask or forfeit the title. And as we saw in the wrestling magazines, a great picture of Dusty from behind, bleached hair and head in hands, the makeup mirror in front, the title on one side, the mask on the other, and, you know, lose situation, but classic, man.
Now, that leads me to believe that ESO there, referee, president, you know, all in one, was the fix in or what, huh?
Oh, definitely. Now, that was a little before my time, but I remember there were a bunch of really similar things that happened. Well, the next one was like the Junkyard Dog, wasn't
it? Yes, you're exactly right, Bruce. Yep, same time frame.
And then, then it was something with, was it Tommy Rich, the Yellow Dog?
That was a great one because...
Yep, good one, yep.
Yeah, because Ted DiBiase beat Tommy Rich in a classic loser leave town match. Sure. Tommy Rich turns up again, mask, bleach blonde hair, same outfit. Probably had I think he might have had Mr. R on his boots anyway.
Yes. Yep.
But for weeks and weeks, they jaw jacked and they battled, and DiBiase almost had the mask off a few times. Finally, it settled in a title match on Georgia Championship Wrestling, a rare thing. It was Ted DiBiase versus Mr. R for the Georgia National Heavyweight title, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was a back and forth battle. And Mr. R was down. Ted DiBiase got distracted by Gordon Solie, and Tommy Rich was up at the podium. And DiBiase looked in shock at Tommy Rich. He's like, how can he be there if he's in the ring? And before he knows it, he's getting schoolboyed into a pinning combination. And what Mr. R wins the match. Do you guys remember who Mr. R was when he took the mask off?
Brad Armstrong.
You got it. Yeah, yes, it was. Great. What a great way to elevate Brad Armstrong, too, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
To his first singles run, I think, in Georgia at the time.
Now, Benny, what was your first recollection of a gimmick match?
I just want to, I want to just expound on this one a little bit. Because, you know, the purpose of this match was kind of twofold. And I want to add one more ridiculous character was Charlie Brown from Out of Town.
Your guy, Jimmy Valiant.
That was Jimmy Valiant. But so it served two purposes. When they lost the match, they could come back with a ridiculous gimmick. But the other reason they did that a lot of times was because the loser had a gig in another territory.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I would think so.
Something that you don't see nowadays. But, somebody lost, maybe hypothetically, Dusty lost to Sullivan. Maybe Dusty had a 3-month run up in New York with Vince.
Maybe they had a court date. Who knows? You never know.
Yeah, it could be anything.
Any number of things, but it was a way to give them, some time out of the territory. And then they came back and they were fresh again.
Yeah. ESO, what about you? What's your earliest recollection of some type of gimmick match?
Probably, I would have to say one of the hair versus hair matches. I remember reading about them in the MPW Pro Wrestling Illustrated.
Sure.
I remember this really, really, this picture of Jimmy Valiant sitting in the middle of the ring, getting his head shaved and on a chair with just this scowl on his face. And that kind of stuck with me.
I remember 87, Lawler versus Idol, hair versus hair in a steel cage match. So you had like a double gimmick thing going on there with Austin Idol versus Jerry Lawler, and he got his head shaved. And of course, Jerry Lawler ended up looking like that. Back to 87.
Everyone was shocked because what people don't remember is Tommy Rich actually had a stipulation that if he lost, that everybody would get their money back. So everybody's going to the Mid-South Coliseum thinking, damn, I'm going to see this match and I'm going to get my money back. I'm going to watch it for free. And of course that didn't happen, but I mean, what is like a twist? That was brilliant.
Speaking of hair match, this has to be one of the most famous ones I can recall. The Battle of the Billionaires, Trump versus McMahon, can anybody remember who, I know, Trump was represented by, Bobby Lashley.
Lashley.
And who did McMahon represent?
Umaga.
Umaga. That's right. I was shocked. This is kind of my time where, my kids were very heavily involved in sports and stuff. So I was traveling a lot. I didn't step away from watching it, but this is kind of, I probably would have grabbed the WrestleMania, but I wasn't doing the Monday Night Raw thing every Monday night and so forth. But I do recall this was mainstream stuff right here. And I'm like, no way is Vince going to lose this match. I'm like, well, no way is Trump going to lose this match. He's not going to cut his hair. But looks like Vince got the short end of this one. So,
and classic outside of the ring action, Trump actually clotheslined Vince McMahon down, outside the ring. Vince ran into a clothesline by the former president, which is just a classic moment. A pretty decent one, too, all things considered.
Yeah. I've seen some, all the memes are out there. He gave him like a right hand outside. Yeah, like a clothesline outside the ring.
Yeah, I think he actually connected with a little bit of a clothesline. Yeah. Really good.
Yeah.
I have a question for you guys. I'm not quite sure on this one. We're talking about hair versus hair, but WrestleMania 3, Piper versus Adonis.
Yes.
Was that a hair versus hair, or was it...
Yeah,
he put him on the sleeper hold, and then he. That's a good question. Whether it was technically billed as one,
wasn't that part of the build-up to Brutus Beefcake turning into the barber?
Well, that was the first time Brutus became the barber. Yes,
right. Yeah,
but I know that if Adonis lost, he got his head shaved. But I thought if Piper lost, that he had to leave. He had to retire.
I think if
they can refresh my memory. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been. I know. That is a good question.
I just remember Brutus in there and all that stuff.
That was his first appearance with the Clippers, wasn't it?
Yep. I do believe so. They were building up to that too, because he did something else. It was another situation where he debuted with the Clippers, but that was the first main pay-per-view that he debuted on with that. So,
what's the under-over on Brutus Beefcake gimmicks?
What's that?
What's the under over on Brutus Beefcake gimmicks? How many did he have?
Lots.
I think he had more than anybody.
When you think about that barber gimmick, though, it lasted from WrestleMania 3 all the way on up until 92 when Sean put Marty through the glass.
Yeah.
So that was pretty long last there.
Yep.
But he had about 15 of them in WCW.
Zodiac, the Booty Man. Oh, my Lord. Yeah. Oh,
by the way, guys, I went to high school with Missy Beefcake.
Come on.
Come on. Smitty says hi, by the way. He says hi. So
hopefully she's feeling better. She wasn't feeling well last night.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I heard bad sushi or something.
Bad sushi.
Wow. Oh, no.
Nothing worse than that.
That's still a thing, huh? Bad sushi? Wow.
I don't know.
Okay, awesome.
I guess you get it like at Phillips 66 or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, gas station sushi. So, no.
Not a good thing.
You know, living in Iowa now for like the past 2 years, that is like main thing. Gas station food is so popular around here. And I try, and like, it's just weird. I you know, you pull in to get some gas and people are getting fried tenderloins and all. I'm like, this is nuts. Like, you know, it must be a regional thing. Obviously, it's a Midwest thing. But no,
it's becoming more and more prevalent everywhere. We have all these things popping up all over. They're full service gas station, whatever's.
Yeah. So
yeah, there's a place in Metro West Mass, gas station known for its tacos. Strangely enough, it's gaining a lot of attention. So yeah,
Is that on the Mass Pike?
Oh no, this is on Route 20, Sudbury Wayland area.
Okay.
But right on Route 20.
Yeah, well, everything around here goes hand in hand. Gas and food, like. Cooked food, like you can go in there, either order lunch to go or sit down and eat it. They have full scale restaurants at these gas stations. It's amazing.
Do you guys have Wawa's by you, or is it just a Florida thing?
No Wawa's. We have Casey's.
No Wawa's.
Casey's is a big thing around here.
Wawa's is another one where you can get like really, really good sandwiches.
Wow.
And okay. I mean, it's predominantly a gas station, but they do have good food there.
Wow.
Yeah, you can order off the kiosk. You can order pretty much anything you want.
Yeah. Who'd have thought?
Now, what am I? I remember when I first became a wrestling fan in July of '81. I went to my first gimmick match live, and it was Andre Khan's stretcher match. Of course, these are snippets I got from the Philadelphia Civic Center. Of course, the one on the left is from Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
But October of '81, when the Andre Khan was probably pretty much at its height, Andre coming back from a broken ankle and all that stuff, and they booked this match. The crowd was so hot for this match. I mean, and then again, you got to think outside the box. You know, there's Killer Khan getting carried away. Do you really think Andre the Giant could have fit on a stretcher? And how many guys would have taken to get him out? Because I remember watching this match. I had great seats, too. I think I was like five rows from the ring. And, of course, they tried to get Andre on that stretcher. They couldn't even roll him onto the stretcher. And I'm like, there's no way that Killer Khan can win this match. But that was my first gimmick match I saw in person. Then, of course, a month later was a steel cage match. But that was like the real gimmick at the time. A stretcher. That stretcher was so flimsy looking. I didn't think it was going to hold even Killer Khan.
Andre's left arm would have fit on that stretcher.
Yeah, it was like, I was more worried that the thing was going to break when they carted Killer Khan out.
But, yeah.
What a crazy, crazy match to have and so forth. Some of the other ones, you know, some of them are more recent and so forth. This one I dug up, 95, the Arkansas Hog Pen match, Triple H versus Henry O. Godwin. This is from In Your House back in 95. I don't know, guys. What do you think? I mean,
was this punishment for the curtain call incident in Madison Square Garden? Was this kind of
before it?
Oh, it was before that. Wow. Yeah,
it was like 96, 97 they left, brutal. Right?
Yeah, they in 90. Yeah, I think in 96. Yeah.
I mean, that's just horrible, horrible stuff there. If you want to go back a few years before that, how about this one? Blindfold match. Jake Roberts versus the model Rick Martel. I mean, a blindfold match.
Yeah,
a
great psychology.
That was a good match.
I mean, shouldn't the referee be blind as well?
Well, Danny Davis. By many accounts, he was.
Ray Charles was the special guest referee.
Yeah, ESO, that's kind of funny. ESO needs to wear a blindfold on Thursday nights.
I'll tell you match from long, long ago that we'll never see again, but it was a huge thing. Actually, asked me when I first started watching was the Brass Knuckles match. Not so much in the WWF, where I grew up, but like in Amarillo, Texas, it was gigantic. In fact, Davey O'Hannon, one of the guests on Dan and Benny in the Ring, he won it very early in his career, but it was a big thing. That was a very prestigious title.
Yeah, it was a championship attached to that too. Yeah.
So, hey, I got a question for you guys.
Go ahead.
Well, one of the first wrestling matches I remember going to was Corporal Kirshner against Nikolai Volkoff in a boot camp match. You know, pretty much a no holds barred extreme match. What were, before that point, what were they called? What was your guys' first, experience with that extreme no-rules match?
Well, I remember the boot camp match was made famous with Slaughter and the Iron Sheik in 85 or 84. Remember when Slaughter turned?
That was a bloodbath.
That's the first time I saw a boot camp match. I think that was a take off the Pat Patterson Slaughter match from 81, right? Where Pat Patterson took the boot to him in
the street fight, the alley fight. Yeah. The alley
street fight.
Great, too. Great. Wow. I mean, violent, was, just extreme before extreme.
You talk a blade job gone wrong on Sergeant Slaughter. He was just bleeding like profusely, really bad.
I gotta rely on you guys for another one. I'm sorry, Phil.
Go ahead.
But I remember this match. I don't remember any details, but the coal miners match, the coal miners glove match.
Whoa,
what was that? Jimmy Valiant one? Bloody mess. But what was in the coal miners glove?
Coal, I think. I don't know. I think they probably reinforced with lead or something. That's a good question.
Because whenever that happened, it was a guaranteed bloodbath.
Wait, now, was that the Hacksaw Duggan Buzz Sawyer match from 85?
I'm not sure. I mean, we could use some help in the chat room there. I just remember that was in the 80s. I remember several of those matches.
I thought Jimmy Valiant had one.
Dusty
too.
Was in a couple of them. I don't remember with who, though.
Looks like the Sheepherders and Buddy Rose had one. Jim Duggan versus Hercules Hernandez. Looks like Jim Duggan's had a couple of these matches. So, yeah, I don't know what the deal is with the coal miner's glove, what's actually in them.
Duggan didn't need a coal miner's glove. His hands were like coal miner's gloves.
We'll get a little of this. On a Friday night in 72, pro wrestlers Apache, Bull Ramos, and Dutch Savage. They had one of those. At the top of the pole sat a coal miner's glove, a welding glove with a steel bar taped across with the knuckles.
There you go.
So that's what it was. Okay. So I assume once you got that glove, it was lights out, right?
Yeah.
For that? Okay. Now, it was funny. You guys were talking about some other matches. For some reason, it popped in my head. I remember picking up a wrestling magazine in the early 80s, and I saw Greg Valentine versus Pedro Morales in a taped fist match. Those are pretty common back then. I don't know how relevant they were with the WWF, but I remember seeing one in a magazine. I think it was from Madison Square Garden, probably.
Yeah.
Because, Valentine suplexed Pedro outside the ring one time, and, that started a brief feud. And that culminated in a taped fist match, which I thought was very odd. Well, some wrestlers taped their fist. Morocco had his thumb, and some guys taped their – now they tape their fist, no problem. CM Punk.
Triple H used to do it all the time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was one. Speaking of wrestling magazines, one of the most famous ones I recall, even in the early 80s, they were still showing it, was the infamous bull rope match, Graham and Rhodes from 1977, which was no doubt probably – I mean, that picture on the left is probably in every wrestling gallery around with him throwing superstar Dusty Rhodes throwing superstar Billy Graham over the top rope and literally hanging him created such a prolific photo in front page magazines all over, which was pretty dramatic. Do you guys remember that bull rope match at all?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then,
I know that.
They also had a Texas death match, another gimmick match where, now I read online that the original rules for a Texas death match was a three count, like you had to pin the guy and then the referee would count to 10 after that. But, Graham and Rhodes, their death match, I mean, they collided and they were both, laying down and Graham just draped an arm over Dusty. And he pinned him 1-2-3, and that was the end of the match. But I mean, the other stipulations, of course, was no DQ, no count out.
Speaking of bull roll matches, what was it last Friday night? Shinsuke and last week? Shinsuke and Cody Rhodes had a bull roll match, and the actual bull rope that we just saw in this photo, Cody Rhodes brought in. Dusty Rhodes was the innovator of this match, by the way. He invented this match. And that exact bull rope was used last week. I think it was on Raw with Cody Rhodes' match against Shinsuke Nakamura. Now, the rules I recall in the 70s and pretty much the 80s, because I know Steamboat, Jay Youngblood, they all used to have these matches. World Class Championship Wrestling used to have them as well. You had to go to all four corners and touch each corner.
Yes, correct.
Consecutively,
there was no pinfalls related to that match whatsoever. It was just that you beat each other up and you knocked him out to the point where you had to drag him. And it was always, you know, you got to that second or third turnbuckle, tap the turnbuckle, and you were going for that last one. You know, it didn't happen. So that's what I call the pinfalls were kind of weird. That, I mean, with last week's bull rope match. So I really can't call it a classic bull rope match, even though they say that. But, you know, but ESO, you had mentioned a Punjabi prison match.
Yeah, what a horrible talking. What a horrible gimmick that was. But that offtake of a steel cage that looked like they had bamboo, it really didn't look like they were doing the damage that they should have. And I hope we never have something like that again.
Yeah, I honestly, when I look at this match, I want to say I probably did watch it because I always watched the pay-per-views back then. I always thought this thing was going to break. I mean, Giant Kali was big, and I'm like, this ain't a steel cage. This is like wrapped in bamboo, but obviously they had reinforcements and so forth. And Batista defended his title and stuff. I mean, you talk about a gimmick. I mean, this thing was like 20, 30 feet high. You could do crazy things with them. I mean, I think at one point they ripped some of the bamboo off. You can beat each other with it. I mean, it was just off the wall stuff.
And under the fingernails.
Yeah. And it's like, who do you think comes up with these gimmick matches? Like, seriously, who comes up with them?
The toy department. They could sell a whole bunch of those little bamboo cages everywhere, you know?
And
little new accessory, maybe.
You know, I picture the old episodes, Mad Men and Frasier with those focus groups. What do they put a bunch of kids in a room and say, give us what your favorite matches you want to see? And then they come up with it and they just kind of streamline it. It's so weird to think that was actually a match and people had to sit through that match. The Elimination Chamber match is coming up next week. I think that's a pretty innovative match. It really combines lot of, you know, steel cage, enclosed, Hell in the Cell, the door opening, the plastic door that opens up. I mean, that just makes for, you know, and you get the lights, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's innovative. That's taken a couple of matches and putting it in one. So that's kind of neat. But, you know, speaking of whoever thought of this one, well, let's go back to this one. A custody match of Dominic Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, the great late Eddie Guerrero, Viva La Raza, and of course, Rey Mysterio, you know, custody of Dominic. You know, it was a custody match, but it was also a ladder match too, by the way. So you had a gimmick within a gimmick on this match. And look how young Dominic is there. Wow. I mean, I've never seen a kid that young have blonde highlights in my life. you know, and here he is in 2024. You know, still in a wrestling ring. So, you know, you think he's probably one of the oldest wrestlers now in WWE long term, seeing that he made his debut in 2005 with this, a custody of Dominic ladder match. They even used his name. That's crazy. What do you guys think of that match?
I'd love to see what would happen with that today.
Who would you have custody of, though? Who would you have custody of? You'd have to have a baby mama, right? You'd have to have like one of the divas or something like that have give birth, and you'd have to have some. I mean, that's probably way too close to real life now, especially with everything.
Who's the father match?
Who's the father? You got might as well. Didn't Maury Povich have something like that? You are not the father.
They should have done that, but they should have used Mae Young's the hand that she gave birth to.
Maybe they should have done the reverse and said, take my kid match, you know?
Take my kid,
you lose. You got to take my kid.
Yeah. Take here's my another wife, one please, I saw online.
Yeah, exactly.
I think was it TNA? Somebody did the reverse battle royal. A reverse battle royal. I had to read up on it. You start off backwards. Instead of
jump into the ring?
Yeah, you have to get into the ring. That was the goal, to get into the ring. And it's just crazy. I mean,
it's almost like a King of the Hill there.
Yeah, it's almost like killing King of the Hill. Another one that's totally off the wall, and the player actually messaged me on this one. It was these two matches right here. First up on top, Shane Douglas, Billy Kidman, Viagra on a pole match in WCW. And as you can see, the writer in this one is the ever popular Vince Russo.
Vinny Roo
with a Viagra on a pole match. Thought? And I guess the Viagra fell all over the ring at the end of the match. And there is, on the left there, that's Tori Wilson, who's actually, isn't she married to Billy Kidman or was married to Billy Kidman at the time?
She was.
Yeah.
I don't think anymore.
Yeah, rubbing his face and all the Viagra and all that stuff.
Surprised Ric Flair wasn't out there with a straw.
Yeah. I can't
snorting it all. Yeah,
exactly.
no pun intended, but it must have been hard for Ric Flair to stay away from this match.
Very hard, yeah.
But I'm bummed. And then, of course, you have the oh my God, from
the Joe, you heard about the poor guy.
The Judy Bagwell forklift match. What the hell were they thinking with this?
What did the winner win in that match, though?
I don't know, and I don't care. I mean, I just managed to get the graphics for it, and I was like, I didn't even want to read about it, to be honest with you. I mean, I could look it up real quick. The Judy Bagwell. Hold on here. Let me see what I can find. Bagwell forklift matches. There we go. The infamous explained. Judy Bagwell on a pole match is rewriting history. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what it was for. It was in 2000, July 31st, 2000. Complete another Vince Russo product. No filter, no other writers to talk him out of this bizarre idea. I don't know. I don't even know what this was all about. It was really Buff Bagwell versus Canyon, right? In this match, that was the whole thing. Judy would have to become his new valet. So it was kind of like a Precious and Sunshine type thing, I guess. But with Judy Bagwell.
She ended up being a champion too, you know.
Yeah. Cruiserweight? Was it the Cruiserweight belt?
Did she have the Cruiser or did she have the tag belts?
Let me take a look. I'm trying to look at that. I could probably one of the tag belts, I think.
I think she ended up with one of the tag belts, actually.
I mean, yeah. I'm assuming this is right after the heels of Lara, what's his name there? Arquette winning the title back in the
WWE. Dark days, man.
It's around that same time.
Some dark days.
A brilliant writing.
Yeah, that's just horrible. Horrible. Now, moving on here, this was kind of a neat match. It was, innovative at the time, but you probably would have got away with this in COVID, but who can forget Halftime Heat, Mankind, The Rock, for the title, the Empty Arena match.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a scene out of COVID days, folks. This is an actual Empty Arena match. This was actually, I forgot about this. Halftime Heat was a Sunday night show that was getting ready to debut. And what better way to do it than during halftime of the Super Bowl in 1999? They called it Halftime Heat. Then the following week, it was called Sunday Night Heat. Mm-hmm. I do believe they taped those matches. Was it during was it the SmackDown tapings they taped these or Raw? One of them had them. Were taped. All the matches were taped before or after these episodes were taped. But Halftime Heat preluded to Sunday Night Heat, which was another offspring of Vince McMahon and those guys. But yeah, The Rock vs. Mankind, Empty Arena match. I remember watching this match. I think, I don't know who was in the Super Bowl, I forget, but we had it on and I'm like, you can't hear anything. All you hear is them two wrestling and the size and all that. Yeah, so do you remember this match at all?
Yeah, it was a good match. It was a lot of fun. I was reading the chat a little bit here.
Oh, that's okay, yeah.
We've got a lot of interaction going on. We got to give a shout out to Ibzan and Maria, Joe Myers, everybody. Thank you guys for being here.
That match was, I think, unique in that for the first time that I remember, a forklift came into the picture. And ultimately, I don't know whether it was used in securing the Rock of victory or what, but I don't know if anyone even recalls, but I recall a fork truck and a pallet being used in a pinning combination.
Yeah, they went backstage and all that stuff. They went out through the arena. So they actually utilized the arena. But looking at the schemat, starting out in the ring with nobody there except you and the two guys and a referee, I mean, that's just so reminiscent of COVID back in the day before they were allowed to bring people back in. So that was kind of weird to look at that too. So
kind of a takeoff on Jerry Lawler and Terry Funk having one years before that. I'm sure they watched that for a few ideas too. Absolutely.
This one I pulled up just for ESO because I know he remembers. He was probably all excited about this one. Was the infamous evening gown pool match at Armageddon 1999. This is for the women's, or I think whatever title was it called, the Divas title back then. I think it probably was. And
That was the height of the puppy eras.
Miss Kitty, Miss Kitty ended up winning the title, which I do believe she was married to Jerry Lawler at the time, right? The King's wife.
Yes, she was.
And she decided to go with the flow, and on pay per view Sunday night, and she decided to take it all off. And I do recall this happening, and because my son was like, "What the hell just happened?" And, Sergeant Slaughter quickly came out and covered her up. They got her right off TV, but as you can see, Jacqueline was leaving half scantily clothed, as they call it. There's a Mae Young sighting in the photo there. But this is crazy. Tori Wilson was involved. It was just, I mean, WWE was just pulling out all the stops. This is no doubt the height of the Attitude Era.
It was. They kept like teasing it. Yeah. And then, they finally did it. Didn't she get in trouble for that too?
Yeah, she did. I do believe, well, she got reprimanded backstage. I do recall that. I mean,
I think Lawler got reprimanded for it too.
Yeah, there was a couple of stories going around saying that she was actually going to do that, and they told her not to do that. And based on her comments and the stuff I've read about, she was so wrapped up in the excitement, the crowd was reacting to her, which is probably the biggest ovation she's ever gotten. And she just went with the flow and just took everything off. And it was really a 3-second scene because Slaughter was right there with the robe to cover her up because they knew it was going to happen. So to be reprimanded for something that they already knew was going to happen when, you know, she already said it was going to happen, it's kind of, you know, looking back on it now, it's like, was it a work? It most likely was. But obviously nothing like that would be ever take place nowadays. What do you guys think of that? You think that could happen nowadays?
Not until we Raw rated R on Netflix. Right. You never know what's going to happen. Although then you have to worry about the public decency laws and stuff like that.
Yep, that brings up a whole another platform. You know, that's something I'd like to get into at one point on one of these shows is what will Raw be like on a streaming network? I mean, are we still going to have PG or PG-13? Are we going to get the swears back? Are we going to get, you know, some of the, I don't know, you know, they do Scissor Me Now and AEW. Are we going to get that type of stuff? Suck It. They don't even say Suck It anymore on WWE television. Not because it's a D-Generation X thing. It's just they can't do it. You know, the networks are so strict now. We don't even get to hear the fans yell bullshit or, you know, F you or whatever without them blocking it out. And it ruins the whole scene.
Well, we say that, but then when I was at the arena, the last pay-per-view or last Raw, I went to at MSG not too long ago.
Okay,
they had everybody getting up and the kids getting up and doing their best cross chops on their, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're still using it. They're just not using it on TV.
Right. Yeah. In-house shows, I can see it happening all the time. Sure. To me, the crowd, you pay for that ticket, you get to do what you want. I hear so many stories now that they confiscate signs.
Yeah.
They tell people to sit down. They actually move people if they, you know, it's like the WWE is trying to control everything. And I think we talked about this on the 30 the other night or 2 weeks ago. Carmelo Hayes came out after turning on Trick Williams and they were swearing so loud. They had to tell the crowd to stop swearing because
they were going
to
cut the feed. Yeah, stop the show.
You know what? You're paying. You're part of the show. You're actually paying to be part of the show. I think that's going a little bit too far because it disrupts the segment. You see it with Cody Rhodes in his segments. You see it with CM Punk. You're probably going to see it tonight on SmackDown with The Rock coming back. I mean, is the whole thing just going to be edited out where you just don't hear anybody anymore? I mean, it's too bad that we're getting to this point in wrestling now that they have to do that. Benny, what are your thoughts?
I think that'll change. You know, once they go over to Netflix, I think we'll see a lot more, you know, a lot edgier product. We'll be, you know, we might even start seeing some color again. Who knows?
Yeah. ESO, what do you think? I think you're going to say something, right?
Yeah. Well, when they move over to Netflix, I think everything, all bets are off on what's going to happen. I think they're going to use SmackDown as their platform for their PG and less, and then, you know, Raw push the boundaries a little like WWE used to.
Right. And SmackDown going to the USA Network too. So, you know, they're going to be obviously got their hands tied. Go ahead, Phil. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. I was just going to say, what better way to build up for this, you know, this big change than to actually tamp down on everything now, rein it in a little bit so that when the move comes and when the new program airs with all the new green lights, I mean, it's going to be that much more dramatic. So I think that in the process of reining it in, downshifting a little bit too, just to create that explosion, you know?
Yeah. Just like WrestleMania, what are we expecting? What, 90,000 people again? I don't even know how many people Philadelphia is going to be able to hold. Probably 70,000, 80,000, maybe tops. You know, they're going to be chanting something derogatory at some point, what are they going to do then? I know they'll be on they'll be on Peacock, but like, are they going to blank it out? I mean, this is live TV.
Yeah, but they do that already.
They'll tamp down the crowd noise in certain ways, and then they'll pump in the cheers where they want to, the chants that they want to. That's too bad.
And I don't know if anybody caught the Texas Death Match the other night on AEW, but geez,
yes, great.
Matt Taven and Orange Cassidy. I mean, you talk about two guys literally beating the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk.
Taven's from New Hampshire, you know, Joe. Yeah, he's up from New Hampshire. He's, I think you built him from Boston, but he's London area or somewhere, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned that on the 30.
Yeah.
And Benny, as you said, there was lots of color the other night on AEW.
Yeah, they don't spare the color there.
Yeah, they don't spare the color. That was unexpected to me because I saw Moxley earlier in the night taking on FTR. I forget which one it was, but they were headbutting each other. They looked like they were trying to rip each other open with their bare hands. And I think if that match went on past the time limit or past the time, that they probably would have done it because their foreheads, their heads look like they're about to explode. Moxley already has a lot of damage up there with scar tissue and all that. So they were throwing some haymakers, and I'm thinking, boy, this looks like Shades of Rhodes and Flair back in the day where, one shot to the head, Abdul the Butcher, same thing. All it takes is one shot to the head and you're busted open. I thought for sure I was going to see that the other night on AEW,
Don't you think it's some a little good bit of blood for sure, man.
They're giving away this stuff for free though. I mean, I think that stuff really should be saved. I mean, that match really, it was overkill for the show it was on.
Right. True. I mean, but I think they're doing it. The ratings have not, it's a steady decline, I think, with AEW's ratings. And how much more are they going to keep up with the Friday night Rampage and the Collision on Saturdays? I mean, the ratings are not great. I know that.
Did you see that Micro Brawler show? Or what do they call it? Little Brawlers on Discovery?
I don't love it. I haven't seen
it. They actually did more ratings than AEW.
Wow. See, I mean, how does Tony Khan justify spending that kind of money? I mean, I don't know. Then again, it's Warner Brothers Discovery that's pitching and putting some of this bill, right? They're on TBS, TNT, whatever. So I just
AEW just really a write-off for his father?
Probably. Jacksonville still, again, hasn't gone to the Super Bowl. I don't know how much money they're going to be sinking into the Jaguars this year. But, money breeds money, but who knows? But then again, I'm looking at March now. March Madness is just a couple of weeks away when you think about it. I mean, they're going to preempt it. They're going to be null and void in March a lot for Friday and Saturdays. They're lucky with Dynamite on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Collision and Rampage, they're going to take a beating in the whole month of March because you got March Madness. They dominate the TBS and TNT that whole month, especially on Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays. So I don't see how they can recover from this after March Madness. I don't know. That's a story for another time. I know we're going off on.
You know, there are more vasectomies during the during March Madness than any time of the year, right?
No, I'm surprised that hasn't been a gimmick match. Loser gets
There you go. Loser gets a vasectomy. Yeah, or maybe winner gets one. I don't know.
The player, you're awful quiet down there. What's going on?
Yeah, I would say the title for that gimmick match would be "It Won't Be Long Now." No, but one of my favorite gimmick matches was the I Quit match, were a couple of really, classics. And the first one was Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard, which was Starrcade 1985. But the thing was that continued. So Magnum, I think Magnum's accident was in 87. But 86. He was on 605 Live in early 1988. And I'm sure we've all seen this when he's out there and all of a sudden Tully Blanchard comes out with J.J. Dillon. I think it was David Crockett was interviewing Magnum. Right. And all of a sudden Barry Windham joins in. Tully hauls off. And that was a stiff shot that he nailed Barry Windham with. Windham went down and then he hit Magnum T.A., and you can see J.J. Dillon just like gently lowering him to the ground and protecting him. But then Dusty came in with a baseball bat and just started going crazy. My point of that, though, was like, and that was very intense. We all remember that. And that's like, 35 years ago?
Yeah. But
that was done in front of like 200 people.
Yeah.
You don't really need a big crowd sometimes to create a memorable moment.
But it's on TV and it's showing to 200 million people back then too. So yeah, no, I remember seeing Lawler, Tommy Rich, all those guys brawling in the studio. I mean, it would be one of those, they'd come back from commercial break and the whole place would be destroyed. That studio TV wrestling mentality. Let's just wreck everything. You know, that's the prelude to the old Brock Lesnar t-shirts, wreck everything and leave type thing. You know what I mean? So crazy.
Wasn't and Bret Hart versus Backlund, I think at WrestleMania, was it 11?
Is that when Backlund regained the title?
Wasn't it?
Was it? Yeah, you had him in the chicken wing, right?
Didn't Helen Hart throw in the towel?
Hart somehow convinced his mother to throw in the towel.
Yeah, Helen Hart did.
Helen Hart
reenacted the whole thing. The I Quit match, when I think of that, I think of Funk and Flair.
Yes, I would have matched that. Whenever,
the cover of the Wrestler magazine had an I Quit match. He's got him in the figure four. That was incredible. You know, some of those matches were unbelievable. Obviously, you know, Terry Funk's no longer with us, but I Quit matches were great.
And yeah, The Rock versus Mankind, which was the another Rock, one.
But yeah, that's, you know, if you read his autobiography, that's when the mother, his wife and kids, Dewey and them, were at ringside, and they had to leave during the match because Dewey was so upset. He was crying. Watching, that was when, 25, 30 chair shots Mankind got from The Rock?
Yeah.
They were brutal ones.
On the mat.
Yeah, his handcuffs behind his back, and he was just keeps beating him, and he's bleeding. And, you know, in the documentary there,
Beyond the Mat.
Beyond the Mat shows him, and his kids hysterically crying. Like, they couldn't watch it, you know? And he's like, oh, daddy's all right, daddy's all right. And it's like, you know, they took it, you know, did they take it too far? You know, I'm not going to say yes or no on that. They knew what they were doing then, but to have your family at ringside and kid at such a young age to witness that.
Yeah.
That's got to leave a mark somewhere mentally.
Well, they used another gimmick in that match. I think that was the one where they actually used an audio that Mick had said during a promo about saying, I quit.
Right.
They played that over the PA.
Yeah.
You know, fooling the referee and presumably the ref and everyone else into thinking Mankind actually uttered those words at that moment when in fact, so they just played that and that's how he got the cheap win and, you know, Mankind saved face. Pretty smart.
Yeah. Back to the Magnum TA I Quit match with Tully Blanchard. That was like a gimmick within a gimmick, though. They were inside a steel cage during that match.
Yes.
Yes, they were.
You know, I remember them trying to maneuver that microphone around the cage. I'm like, wait, they're in a cage. It's an I Quit match. You know, but I think that was because they didn't need one outside interference, correct?
Right. And Baby Doll just standing there at ringside with their gloved hands covering her face all the time really added to that dramatic element. I mean, and what's more, the way it was mic'd was really good. You couldn't hear any spots called, but you could hear them screaming and groaning and pain and, you know. So it was the audio was really good for that too. It was a masterpiece, really. Yeah, it was an incredible, and that's why we remember it. It was just so well done.
Yeah, one match we haven't mentioned was the Indian Strap match, Chief J Strongbow, all that.
Wahoo too.
Yeah, Wahoo was famous for that. Yeah. I remember World Class Championship Wrestling did it. ESO, you remember those?
I remember the strap matches, the Manny Fernandez Wahoo McDaniel ones.
Yeah, those are brutal.
I've only watched him on video, but man. And then when I got to meet Manny Fernandez, he was telling me, you know, why it looked so, you know, why it looked like it hurt so bad was because they were just going at it each night.
Yeah.
As hard as they could. And,
you know, that's one guy that doesn't get a lot of credit, but Wahoo McDaniel, he played football, but boy, could he wrestle for a guy his size. Legit tough guy. I mean, there was somebody there. I mean, guys like that, those wrestlers back then, I'd love to walk down a dark alley with them. There was no problem with these guys.
You weren't messing with that guy at a bar unless you were stupid.
No way.
I'll tell you another great match that doesn't get its due is the dog collar match between Greg Valentine and Roddy Piper.
Yep.
Those guys legitimately beat the living crap out of each other.
You got permanent hearing.
Didn't Piper have permanent hearing damage?
Yeah, he did. Yep. And I think it was something to do with, wasn't even the chain. I think it was something to do with the turnbuckle or something. He had mentioned, they played it off that the chain did the damage, but I think it was a weird injury that took place in the match that caused it. But yeah, they played it up like Valentine did something to him. But
the funny thing is then Piper went to the WWF and then Valentine followed maybe a few months later.
Yeah.
And that's when Piper had his pit. And Valentine was one of his first guests. And you could tell, I mean, at least they played it up that there was legit, you know, there was tension between the two of them.
Right? Yeah.
And then they embraced after that.
Yep. That's why I always thought I would have loved to have seen that Greg Valentine, Ric Flair match in the WWF or WWE back then. That would have been awesome. Because, I mean, they had a feud. No one talks about that feud, Valentine and Flair. They went from tag team champs to nemesis, right? Back in the day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So nobody talks about that, you know.
That's why Valentine started using those robes, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you look at them, they look pretty much like they could have been the Valiants or whatever they were at the time. You know, they dressed alike. They looked alike. They have long blonde hair, streaky hair, you know, that type of thing. So. That was kind of interesting. Though.
I thought Joe was going to do the intro to the
flag.
What about
the flag matches? I forgot about those back in the back in the 80s.
They talk alike.
Which was that, Bruce? The flag match? Flag on a pole match?
Yeah, flag. Yeah, the flag matches. I forgot about them, but I remember a bunch of them back in the the 80s.
That's got Hacksaw Jim Duggan written all over it too, right? He used to.
I was thinking. I remember it more with Nikolai Volkoff and.
Yeah.
It was Nikolai and Hogan or something like that.
Yeah.
Does anybody know? Was that the real Russian national anthem?
It was.
Just name it? Was it?
It was the real one.
No kidding, huh? Unbelievable. And he wasn't right.
He had a good voice,
right?
Nikolai.
Was close enough to Russian. Yeah. He was over there in the Eastern Bloc nations. I forget which one particularly, but he was close enough to being a Russian to claim it, I think.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So my grandfather and grandmother ran into him at the Jersey Shore one summer. So I have a picture of my grandmother eating ice cream with Nikolai Volkoff.
Classic, man.
There you go.
Wow.
There you go.
That always counts a really classy gentleman, too. Seriously.
Yeah.
You know who I had a good interaction with when I was young? I was, I think it was like 84. I was at a wrestling show at the Garden, Phil.
Yeah.
And Paul Orndorff was at, I don't know if you remember Halftime Pizza across the street from the Garden.
Okay.
Paul Orndorff was there, and I was in line getting a slice of pie afterwards, and he was there, and he tapped me on the shoulder, me and my buddy. He's like, I'll buy you pizza. And we sat down with him, and we had a slice of pizza with him, and he was he was into coaching and mentorship back then.
You're shitting me. You know, that's so wild.
Like, this guy was built like a brick shit house too. I mean, of course, I'm 14, 15 years old. Look at this guy. Like, wow. And when he had passed, Travis, his son, was on Facebook. And I shared that story with Travis. He goes, believe it or not, Joe, he did that an awful lot. He would go survey the area and walk up to random teenagers. Not in a weird way, but like, sit down and talk to them and mentor them. Stay in school. Are you playing sports? Are you doing stuff? And he was a genuine, I mean, here is a guy that's supposed to be hated on TV and all that stuff. And he was big. He just blended in with everybody. And it was me and like three other guys, Mike and Mike. And we just sat there and we just shot the shit with him. And he was telling us, stay in school, play sports, lift weights, you know, don't do dope, that stuff. Just being a real genuine human being. And I can't imagine something like that happening today. The way they groom these superstars now, you can't even get near these guys. But, you know, a similar case, Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas. They used to walk the streets of Boston and Cosby with their tag titles.
Oh, sure.
They were so jovial, with their brief run and all. But, you know, you don't hear those stories anymore. ESO, do you have a story like that at all? Anything like that?
As a kid, the only person I would run into would be once in a while Captain Lou Albano. Lou was a larger than life person in our area. I mean, and he would be everywhere. He'd be at a McDonald's, and you'd always see the kids. He never turned away a kid.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you must have grew up on unborn virgins' goat milk. That was
no, it wasn't
diet.
Quite the rural area you would think.
That was my unborn virgin goat's milk and potato chips. Wasn't that what he trained
all over the chest? Remember it all over the chest.
I was so skinny back then. I couldn't put anything on my chest. It would just fall off.
Now Everybody sat there is spilling everything.
It's not staying on. I can't get the picture right, you know?
He never met a meatball he didn't slip on, right?
That's so funny. Yeah, right. Slipping on the meatball ground.
Player, did you meet anybody when you were younger like that? Just in a random area?
No, I mean, but in general, I mean, you'd see, like, I mean, these guys were way, way more accessible. I mean, even at the matches, I mean, if you waited outside the Garden, back in the 60s and the 70s, you could get like a Bruno or a Billy Graham to autograph your program for you. You can't do that now.
Even back in the day, I know Gary Michael Capetta shares those photos, but I remember seeing photos where the fans would go up to the ring and just hand them a, you know, a piece of paper, and they would sign it before they got introduced to the crowd.
I walked like, right up to ringside, my first show in 1968, and Edouard Carpentier was in a six-man match.
Okay.
And I just walked up and said, good luck, Ed. And he shook my hand. I walked. I mean, nothing. I mean, you could do that.
I tried to say good luck to Don Morocco when he came in one day and he took a swipe at me. I was patting him on the back, you know, the quick tunnel area where they used to go from the garage to the room. I was patting him on the back and he turned around and took a swipe at me. He was all kayfabe and everything, but I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, okay.
Adrian Adonis did that to us too. We were sitting at ringside once. Yeah.
Yeah. He looks like he could beat someone up too in his heyday. My God.
Yeah.
Yeah, good stuff.
Unless you're Danny Spivey. That's the one Danny guy he ran into.
Dangerous Dan, the left-hand man.
Dan, the Hulk Hogan look-alike. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Real-life godfather, too.
Real quickly, I did get some news out of the tragic Billy Jack Haynes situation. He is still being currently held at a hospital. They're still not disclosing what it is, but my guess, obviously, he's in a lockdown situation, which leads me to believe it's a mental psychiatric unit. And police presence at his home today where the murder took place. I don't know if this is a gathering of evidence, and so to speak, but there have been reports in the Portland media and so forth that there was heavy police activity today just in the house. So not sure what that's all about. There's still mum on the situation. So right now he's still under hospital care. And as soon as he is released out of that hospitalization, he's going to be booked and go right to jail, and then going to release the police report. And, you know, sooner or later, we'll find out what happened in the home 2 weeks ago. What are we at? We're going on 2 weeks today that this happened. So,
yes, correct.
You know, still nothing. And according to the last update from the sergeant in charge, he was only supposed to be held in the hospital for he said some days. Looks like we're approaching weeks now. So I don't know. It definitely has to be a lockdown facility.
Yeah, I mean, he had a rib injury before this. I mean, you're not going
to
be in the hospital.
They're trying to play that up and so forth. And I know that is
that's good for a day or two.
There's some rumblings. Bill Apter had a voicemail from him back in December. That's making the rounds. But he said that his wife was in the hospital at the time. And this coincides with the neighbor's story that she was battling dementia and had to take care of her. Because I think it was right after she came home from the hospital, Billy ended up hurting his ribs. So in that, you know, that the timeline fits with the voicemail and all that stuff. So, you know, right now it's still status quo, but there was some police activity at the home today, probably gathering evidence or, you know, trying to figure out what's going on there. But nonetheless, so, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, and, you know, this could break at any moment once he's released. So
lots of non-wrestling news.
I know, it's crazy. And of course, making the rounds is, Ashley Massaro's quote unquote best friend was on News Nation last night talking about the Ashley Massaro incident in Kuwait from 2007, the sexual assault that transpired. The kicker in all this, though, is this lady, Piper is her name, Pipper or something like that, mentioned that when she got back to the States and they had a boardroom meeting, she had a boardroom meeting with Vince and a lot of higher ups on the situation where they chose to not cover it up, but just don't say anything to anybody because they wanted to keep their relationship with the military on good terms. Not one mention in the affidavit does it mention Stephanie McMahon being in the room. And even I reread the affidavit today, and it just really says John Laurinaitis, Vince McMahon, and a bunch of other higher-ups. No females were in the room. And this girl, Pippa, her best friend, went on last night, the news, and said that, no, Stephanie McMahon was in the room. She's fully aware of what's going on. So, you know, that's more of a less now of you know, we don't know what's true or not. But if you go by the affidavit, she's not named in the affidavit, Stephanie McMahon, whatsoever. So, but my question remains to this day, how did this not come out beforehand? Why did it take a senseless tragedy with her passing, a CTE concussion lawsuit, and now all of a sudden this affidavit? The lawyers have had the affidavit since 2019. It happened in 2017 when she testified. and put the affidavit, you know, did the deposition and so forth. Why is it now coming out now? Like, why is this waiting so long to come out? That's my biggest question. You guys have any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. Money can really gum up the works, and really justice can move very slowly when there are big entities involved in the situation, I think, you know?
Yeah, it's a tough gig. I mean, you know, Ashley was, you know, I don't know if you guys read this affidavit, but she signed she won 2005's Diva Search in a non-wrestling capacity. And within a week of signing the contract for the $250,000 she was forced to get in the ring. And she has a history of ring injuries with no training whatsoever. I mean, you got to read the affidavit. It's not very long, but it does detail her account of all the injuries she's had. She's had metal rod placed in her body. She's had broken bones, broken noses, with no wrestling background, no wrestling training whatsoever. So it's kind of shocking when you read this. Like, why would they even allow someone like this in the ring? And Trish Stratus is in there telling her just to toughen up and don't tell anybody she got a concussion during her first match. It's like a lot of stuff in there. So,
wow.
Yeah, pretty sad stuff. But all right, folks, I think that's going to do it for us. Any final thoughts on gimmick matches or anything like that?
One that we didn't mention, it was always interesting, was the First Blood match.
Oh, yes. First Blood, yeah. That kind of coincides with the taped fist match, right? Because if you're going to hit him, First blood, right?
You would think so, right? Yeah.
That's why I was shocked that the Pedro Valentine match was called a taped fist match. When what does the winner, like, how do you perceive the winner? You know,
yeah.
Say knockout, last man standing, things like that. But
yeah.
How about the Bret Hart, Jerry Lawler, Kiss My Foot match?
No, I saw that too. There were thousands of gimmick matches.
Which led to the introduction of Dr. Isaac Yankum, right?
Yes, yep. Sir Isaac Yankum. Yeah, that's right. And the Kiss My Ass Club and all that stuff. Remember those days? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. I want to thank everybody in the chat tonight. Good chat going on. Jay Will in the house, Maria, Beth Hopper, Baby Cakes, Joe Myers in there. Everybody's in there tonight. Nice. Hey, Loose Cannon, can you go say hi to him? Ibzan Arroyo. Who's that? Bruce, you know him, right?
We know Ibzan. He's everywhere.
Yeah, he's everywhere. He's usually on our Monty and the Pharaoh regular podcast.
Yeah, I've seen the name pop up recently, so that's kind
of neat. Yeah, and he's also a lot of times on Duke Drosy's podcast. So, yeah, he's everywhere.
He used to be a Boston wrestling guy as well. We remember Ibzan. Yeah.
Matt Holland, Maria, everybody in the house. Monty stopped in and said hi earlier tonight. So, yeah, good stuff there. So, I'll just let everybody know, thank you so much for tuning in live and watching on the replay. And, of course, if there's any breaking news on any of the wrestling stories circulating right now between Ashley Mazzaro and her affidavit and her claims of sexual harassment by Vince McMahon, and, of course, Janelle Grant, the ever-lovely Janelle Grant, who now has author and actor on her resume as well, as we saw on the Monty and the Pharaoh show last night. What'd you guys think of that real quick, huh? Did you know she was an author and an actress?
There's more there, Joe. I'm sure.
More there.
Her acting career was very, very limited, though. Didn't she appear like in a Christian film?
Yeah, it was a Christian.
Theory. And in her book, I mean, now if I read this right, didn't she go to Yale? She's not a dumb girl.
I would imagine living in Connecticut, that seems obvious. Sure. Yeah. I think she went to
Yale. Yale's an Ivy League school. You're not gonna go in there with a 900 SAT score. I mean, Yale's a very exclusive university. In her book, I mean, I read a little bit of it. I mean, it doesn't really say anything. It's got no bearing on the case whatsoever. Neither does the movie. That's just foolish.
But I mean, it's funny. She's been ever since the lawsuit dropped and everybody's focusing on Vince. You go to find any information on her. I mean, she's gone obviously off the grid. Everything's been scrubbed pretty much, except for the stuff that we're digging up now. And you got to really dig up this stuff too. She's not very easy to look up. So, you know, it is.
I haven't seen anything about this woman that remotely sounds like a scandal, though.
No, I've checked LinkedIn. I've checked she's off the radar, and rightfully so. I mean, I'm sure, you know, when this thing takes place and all that, someone's going to get a really, really good interview out of this. And she's probably going to make a lot of money just on the interview aspect of it alone. So we'll see what happens. We shall see. Yeah. All right, folks. Happy Friday, I guess. All that good stuff. Any plans for the weekend? We got any plans?
Nothing? Work.
Yeah, working tomorrow.
Working tomorrow. Okay.
Just prepping for the podcast for next week.
Yeah.
There you go. What do you got? What do we got coming up? True Crime Monday? What are we doing?
True Monday? Crime Monday night with Dr. Sam Shepard. Dan and Benny is going to be probably maybe taped on Wednesday night. We have a return guest, Dr. Harvey Whippleman. Yeah, Downtown Bruno Lauer, who I absolutely love. Nice. And we got our other shows, Dot 30, and we got this Death one. 30,
Wrestling Remember.
We're busy guys.
That's it. And I want to, again, thank you guys for joining this awesome show, this awesome network. Monty and the Farrell YouTube channel. If you haven't subscribed, feel free to hit that little icon on the bottom there where you see Monty and the Farrell. Great show, great channel. Lots of new stuff coming your way. I know.
Good merch also.
ESO is chomping at the bit. He's got some, we got some stuff lined up. We got some creativity stuff going on, you know?
Yeah, we've got some stuff in the works. So let's we'll just keep it at that. Yeah. We got to keep this channel growing. We need to we're pushing for 20,000.
Phil was showing the pecs there. What do you got? Monty and the Farrell t-shirts now available,
sleepy
right?
Sleepy guy.
Yeah, baby.
This is the sleepy guy shirt.
Pro wrestling tees, right? As well as the channel, they sell these things, right?
Well, this one's available on the Monty and the Farrell channel, okay. But if you go on to prowrestlingtees.com, we have lots of Monty and the Farrell regalia available there. If you look up the Monty family, you'll see the one that Phil and Benny and I are on.
Yeah, somebody's missing from that photo. I'm just saying.
We're going to get Bruce, there. We need to.
There was a great t-shirt you guys had. I think you guys had it. It said De Blasio is line across his name. Hochul, line across. Did you have something like that?
Yeah, I have. I love New York before. Yeah. Hochul, before De Blasio.
I love that. COVID, I got to get one of those.
Yeah. It was all before. It was all those classic take on those. I love New York, but all kinds of stuff. You know, before COVID-19, before lockdowns,
in the
70s, in the 80s.
Yeah.
I remember the old bumper sticker back in Boston, Phil. Remember, I love New York too. It's the Yankees I hate.
Hey, now.
You know, it's like, yep. Oh, my God.
Ouch.
Whatever. All right, guys. Good show tonight. We're going to wrap this up. Thank everybody again live on the chat. Thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you guys whenever. I know we're all over the channel, so I want to thank everybody for tuning in. And you guys have a happy Friday. Take care, everybody. What a day.
What a day, man.
Later, guys.
See you, Bruce. Bye, player.